Everyone, and welcome to another exciting episode, but not just any episode. This is episode 69 of the Banter Pub FC podcast. We are still the spiciest. We are still the sauciest team in the game and the spiciest takes on the pitch. And even the captain can get the intro wrong. That's how excited I am about today's episode. However, this is episode 69, folks.
Nice.
So this is going to be extra spicy. This is going to be extra saucy. So just expect all of that today. I am your host, El Capitan, Neil. In the Banter Pub with me this week, we have Ama, we have John, we have Rossler, we also have Joseph. Adam is still on a little bit of sabbatical. We wish you the best. If you are up to speed on listening to our episodes, you heard him this week on our Four Africans Only AFCON segment. We're still the only podcast that is actively doing AFCON content, but you knew that already. But let's get started with the segment you're used to by now. It's Around the Pitch. So obviously, in Ligue 1, PSG is still at the top of the table, so there's no changes there. In La Liga in Spain, Real Madrid is still at the top of the table. There's no changes there. Weren't any big matches of any significance that happened between last episode and this week's episode, so we're not really going to go into too much detail as far as table shakeups because it's still early doors in the season. You know, it's the middle of the January transfer window right now as of this recording, and our main segment is going to be a teaser of that, and we'll get to that in a moment. But getting into the Prem, what would Around the Pitch be without the Prem? Two major things that we're going to cover happened this week. And before we talk about Chelsea, we have to, because we have representation from the Arsenal Football Club and Liverpool Football Club. So, as of this recording, they had the second cup tie in their EFL match. Their first one was a draw 0-0 that Liverpool actually should have won, considering the fact that they had the man advantage. But Arsenal did what they needed to do, and the game ended 0-0. Fast forward to as of this recording, it was a different result. So, gentlemen of the pub, for those of you that watched the match, for those of you that didn't watch the match, obviously, the result was a 2-0 victory to Liverpool Football Club. Arsenal did get a red card from a returning Thomas Partey. And we'll talk about AFCON, and we'll talk about some of the AFCON results in a moment because they're getting ready for the round of 16. Gentlemen, what were your thoughts about that EFL match? I'm going to start with the winner, the man who represents the winners of that, Rossler. What are your thoughts about that result today?
All due respect to Arsenal, they've had some adversity this year, and they've shown some growing pains. And you know, they have, like Ama and Joseph have mentioned a few times, they have one of the younger clubs in the Prem, But with all due respect, we did what we had to do. And for us, I think it was encouraging to see the team win without Mane and without Salah, because it shows that we might have a little bit more depth than we had. Of course, Jota is a great player as well to have. But, you know, whenever you have your, you don't have your top scorers on the team, it kind of gives you some trepidation. But we pulled out the win and we did what we had to do. So, I mean, all in all, good win. But to be completely honest, I haven't been too happy with Liverpool's performance as of late, because we've been dropping a lot of points and tying with a lot of teams. So it was good to see us finally get a much needed win.
I won't necessarily say indeed, because that would, you know, because they'd take away my Manchester United card, but which I do actually have a official Manchester United Supporters Club card. That's a conversation for another day.
So, I mean, Neil, you can leave whenever you want. You can come. We'll take you.
First of all, I'm not like other denizens of this club. I will never leave a club and go to a rival. That's never going to happen. I'm not Sol Campbell. Speaking of the Arsenal Football Club, Ama, Joseph, your thoughts after the result. This is the second match where Arsenal suffered a red card in an EFL Cup tie back-to-back. Obviously, Xhaka got a red card, pretty significant one, during the run of play. And then obviously in this match, Thomas Partey got a red card late in the match. He got a yellow and then a red. It wasn't a straight red. So, Ama, Joseph, as the two Arsenal supporters this week in the pub, what are your thoughts?
It's too bad that was our last cup tournament that we're Arsenal's in the semifinal, you know, return leg. Unfortunately, we, you know, took the L, but, you know, I'm not going to start panicking or anything, because we are, you know, at the beginning of the season, we predicted lots of ups and downs. Now, of course, we wanted a lively cup run, and for me, more so in the FA Cup than the EFL Cup, but, you know, we're out of both of those. And yeah, so there's definitely a level of disappointment. I'm okay with that, though. The most important thing we got to do is handle business in the league, and I think we're poised to do that. The players, even, you know, if you want to call our squad depleted, in all these matches, we're able to put out competitive sides, whether or not we got the results. So that's, to me, that's positive. There was a time when I would have been panicking. But I really just don't, because you never know with these young guys may give you the performance of their lives. And even if they don't, you know, they have room to grow and hopefully they're getting useful experience. So, sucks to be out of all cup competitions, but it's okay that, we're still in competition for European places and even in competition for top four right now. And that is not something I would have really predicted at the beginning of the season. So I'm happy overall. I won't freak out and throw toys out the pram like some of the Arsenal people you might see on your social media.
Joseph, do you have anything to add?
I think Arma's covered it perfectly. I mean, it really, you know, is disappointing to see another shot at, you know, domestic silverware go, you know, fading out like that. But, you know, again, it's part of the project, you know. You shouldn't expect the younger side in the league to win anything. But, you know, the fact that we made a semi-final berth in the League Cup, we went out sad in the FA Cup, I'm not going to lie. But I think that was a classic case of Arsenal not having the shooting boots on and taking chances when they had them. And, you know, fair play to Nottingham Forest. They deserve their win. But my main thing now is just focusing on the league. Top four is not just viable, it's doable. The schedule looks absolutely delicious. We should be going out there making sure that we absolutely wrap these sides up so that we, you know, when the time comes for the North London Derby to be back on, we're ready. You know what I mean? I want a similar performance to the way that we handled them in the first leg. I know that it's possible. We've proven that it's possible. So I just really want them to continue to go from strength to strength. You know what I mean? I do worry about COVID. I do worry about the outbreaks. But all things going well, I think that we can definitely not just finish above Spurs, but also finish in the top four comfortably as well. We have plenty of games in hand on the people above us. Sans Spurs, who has a game in hand on us. But we have a game in hand on Man United, who we're level on points on and ahead in the table of. I like our chances. I like our chances, and I really want to see the performances that I know that we're capable of.
Agreed. Agreed. John, do you have anything to add about the result? I'm sure you watched it like I did as a consummate independent. But I'm just curious, because we are a City United at, you know, when it comes to these kind of fixtures. So,
you know, I'm not worried about Carling Cup. Oh, I mean, Carabao Cup now. Been there, done that. Won all four in a row, so we good. I'm just more mad that y'all let this cheating-ass Liverpool team not only win, but goose egg y'all. And I'm also mad that y'all forced Thomas Partey to take the red eye, put him out on the pitch, and get him suspended, man. Arteta, this is not the first time Arteta's done some shady shit like this. Remember when he got injured? Partey got injured and they tried to push him back on the pitch. And like, it's just a limping Thomas Partey struggling. I'm just mad as hell at that, but you know, nothing else to offer. Just mad as hell.
Yeah, that's a fair criticism. I was very surprised to see him on the bench for that match. Like, yes, this is semifinal, but I don't, you know, especially on the, I think he's on an emotional low from getting knocked out so early. And then, you know, that whole Ghana team was crushed. So I agree with you that seems like poor man management and definitely kind of for that specific player. So yeah, even if you put him on the bench, because, you know, we had a couple young boys who hadn't played with the senior team yet on the bench. So yeah, you know, I know our numbers were low, but putting him on the bench seemed like a really bad sign. And then he brought him on, like, yeah, we're chasing the game and you're just desperate, throwing everything at the wall to see what sticks. So, you know, as much as we have a young team, we also have a young manager, and I think time will tell.
I also want to add that, you know, the thing about it with the Partey thing is that didn't just expose maybe, you know, some questionable management decisions. Yes, you should probably never start somebody who just arrived back from an international tournament in the first match you throw him at, regardless if it's a cup semi-final or not. You know what I mean? It's just not advisable. But it shows the depth that we do not yet have in the defensive midfield department. With now Xhaka and Partey suspended, that's going to be kind of tough. You know what I mean? I know that the board has already said that, you know, we don't need to worry about selling players in order to bring whoever it is that we want and or need in. So, you know, we got, you know, the blessing from the billionaires there. But I really feel like it definitely exposed just how much depth we don't have and how much strength we don't have in defensive midfield at the moment. Because when the side is up at its optimum level, we've seen what happens. That's happened. You know, you got the form that you saw the earlier part of the season through to now. You know what I mean? But when we don't have those weapons, we're toothless in that department. And that kind of is, you know, gets exposed and it shows. Towards the end of the match of the League Cup, you know, you saw plenty of men behind the ball. And they did well with clearing the ball and, you know, neutralizing chances. But the amount of chances that they invited on at that point, because we just did not have that rock in central midfield, it showed. So, yeah, I think Jonathan's right. He's not just being shady as he usually is.
Ain't that the truth? Ain't that the truth? So in the Bundesliga, there were no changes in the top of the table. But before we leave the Prem, I did want to talk briefly. Are we on a Chelsea pack watch this early? Chelsea's been losing a lot of points. Obviously, the Lukaku situation is still kind of, yeah, he sent the apology, but he looked like he was under duress when he sent that apology. And I don't think he really truly is apoplectic about being a part of the Chelsea Football Club, if I'm being honest. I think he's just taking a paycheck.
If he was about this Chelsea project, this man would never have gone and made those statements. Like, that's, I'm sorry, man. Lukaku is, I think his heart is definitely not with this Chelsea team. And they don't look like they're anywhere close to where they were last season, which is very, notable. This is your reigning Champions League winner, and they are right now, they're kind of unpredictable in the league, even with the weapons they have and have added. And yeah, just I don't know. I don't know that there's a good explanation for it. I think you got a smart tactical manager, but it's evident that, you know, he may not be the greatest man manager. And, you know, that descent with their superstars, you know, we already have issues with like Werner, like at the striker position. And it's really unfortunate for them. And for Romelu Lukaku that, you know, that move, that big money move hasn't paid off, to be frank. Like, you know.
Lampard. Sorry. It was right there, so I had to do it. It was right there.
All pun intended.
Exactly.
Frank didn't work out, and frankly, Romelu is not working out either. So there we go.
Sorry, John. Go ahead. I cut you off.
I was just gonna say when you hire somebody that looks like a James Bond villain, like what do you expect? You're gonna go downhill. So fold them up, put them in a nice little pack. Maybe you might have to use some backwoods for this team because they're not that good to even use some swisher sweets. They done.
Well, I mean, they're certainly done in the league. I think. Rossler, obviously, you know, your Liverpool have them in the EFL championship game. Because Chelsea did a pretty good number on Spurs. It's Spurs, but they did a pretty good number. But again, as far as the league is concerned, Chelsea is dropping points. They drew recently against Brighton Hove Albion. And make no bones about it. Chelsea has the depth from a attacking standpoint to score goals. They really don't have any players lost to AFCON right now. So there's no reason for them to be dropping points. Unless their manager, as John already said, looks like a Bond villain.
Mendy. They're missing Mendy. But
all right, Mendy, yes.
And that's a big miss, right? Because I rate him pretty highly. But, you know, and I have no faith in Kepa. But still, they should be beating Brighton. I'll say
can we just quickly just double back to the whole Lukaku thing? So here's the thing, all right? Lukaku's been done it for Chelsea. So it's not as if he owes the club anything. You know what I mean? I just want to kind of put that one out there. The statements that he said, I think, were kind of taken out of context when you watch the actual interview clip back in full, that particular segment, right? And it's not to say that he was like denigrating Chelsea or anything like that. It's just that look at what he left at Inter Milan.
Yeah, I would miss it too if I were a player. He was looking at it from a player aspect. Like, damn, that was a really good team that I really loved playing on, that I absolutely was one of the, like, the fulcrums of. And they're going from strength to strength without me. And I wish I were there with them, just like they probably wish that I were there playing with them. I bet you any one of them.
That's disrespectful, though. I'm sorry. Like, yes, I agree. And actually, I think we want players to be able to speak their minds a little and be more less guarded. But yeah, that was definitely a violation. If you were gang with me, it's a violation. I'm sorry. If I was a Chelsea supporter, I would take that personally.
I feel that on multiple levels, not just an emotional one. I see where you're coming from. It's just that I think that both are true. Is he committed to the Chelsea project? Of course he is. He hasn't had a great run because obviously, you know, COVID kind of, you know, killed his run dead. You know what I mean? Prior to that, you know, you also got the fact that Thomas Tuchel, once again, does not know how to use a striker like Lukaku. He keeps playing like a target man. He's not a target man. Lukaku's not a target man. You're not playing like a target man. He's not Olivier Giroud. If you're pointing him out there thinking, why don't you do the same thing that Olivier Giroud does? Because he doesn't play like Olivier Giroud does. That's the whole point.
Then is he really committed to the project? Because if they're backing the manager and the manager's not playing him right, then he has no confidence. Like, why would I want to continue playing here then?
I mean, I get that also. That kind of feeds into it. But I still don't feel like he's any less committed to making it work at a club that he's played for 3 times now. You know what I mean? Like, this guy is not less committed to Chelsea just because he misses what he literally just left. And I think that's real. I think you can balance that out. I don't think it's disrespectful to what he's doing at Chelsea. But then again, Chelsea's a shit club and he shouldn't be there anyway. So I back him going back to Inter Milan as all said and done. Shit. You know? If he does the damn thing. I love that idea. You know what I'm saying? But to be objective and not biased against Chelsea like I usually am, I really don't feel in my heart of hearts that he was disrespecting that project. Because let's be fair, both of those things are true. Could he be doing better for Chelsea? Yes. COVID notwithstanding.
Not only that, I mean, he was out there talking about the manager's tactics and all that. Like, bro. You can't tell me that.
But is he wrong, though? That's the thing. Thomas Tuchel has no clue how to use
Lukaku. He's not wrong. He's not wrong, but, like, what do you expect to be the outcome of that conversation, right? Like, you're not talking to the manager about it. You're out in public talking to Italian journalists about how, you know what I mean? Like, what are you doing? I'm sorry. I'm sorry. It's a violation.
Hey, listen, it's about to be 50 million. He's back into Milan in the summer. 50 million euros, blood. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, Inter Milan is broke, so I don't think they're going to be paying 50 M's for Lukaku or for anybody else for that matter.
I don't know. You keep doing well in the Scudetto. You keep doing well in as you've been doing in these competitions. I mean, you won the Supercoppa. So, you know, there's a healthy payday there. You know
they did do well in Scudetto, and they still didn't have the money. So,
yeah, that's what
I'm saying. But that's beyond Inter Milan's control. Obviously, with the league deciding to go ahead and do this weird TV deal with a streaming only service, DAZN, I think it is. The payouts are not going to be that massive because who's subscribed to DAZN like that? How much ad revenue do they have coming in like that? You see what I mean?
And then, they were also suffering from, you know, what is it? Evergrande or whatever, the Chinese company.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, that didn't go well.
So, like, yeah. So, yeah. And to John's point, they won the Scudetto. So, winning and they were broke. And that's literally why the coach left, because they're broke. And with the coach not coming back, that's literally why Lukaku is where he is, because they broke. So it's
that. but also on Chelsea, I do want to say that, he's not the only Chelsea potential outcast, not just this January, but certainly this summer. I mean, you have Christensen, one of their center backs. You have Rudiger, who's, you know,
Rudiger's getting plenty of time,
though. He's getting time, but he's also, He's getting time right now, but I would not put it past Thomas Tuchel and particularly the Russians that run Chelsea Football Club to be, because they were cold on Rudiger last season. So and that's partly because Frank wasn't playing him despite the fact that he was one of their best center back options, if not their best center back option. So, you know,
what do you mean? You think you're trying to say he's better than Kurt Zuma?
All right, bro, let's shift it to the Bundesliga. You know, let's just go ahead and see what's... Let's check in with Germany and see if everything is a honking door. You're like, yeah, you wow, bro. Relax. Not Kurt Zuma. Anyway, look.
Yes, let's move on. thank you. So, yeah, we'll just have to see. You know, Chelsea is definitely on pack watch. Moving on, again, as I mentioned before, in the Bundesliga, Bayern is still at the top of the table. However, Dortmund is back in form because, wouldn't you believe it, once the Haaland articles about him speaking Spanish and, you know, several players, will they, won't they leave? I know one of the Dortmund wingers just left. One of the young guys went to Eintracht Frankfurt. But for all intents and purposes, you have a healthy team now. And Dortmund are doing, and Dortmund are climbing. They have a sizable goal difference gap. Not points, but sizable goal difference gap with Bayern. So it's going to be very difficult to eclipse that and potentially win the Bundesliga title. But stranger things have happened. But it's also only January. Right now, Bayern is in the driver's seat. So moving quickly to AFCON, and in post, I hope we add some of our four Africans only AFCON segment music for our mini episodes that we've been doing, certainly. And if you haven't listened to those, please do, because again, we're one of the only podcasts in the United States that talks and covers a beautiful game, talking about AFCON on a regular basis. So please give those mini episodes a listen. Obviously, this was another great, exciting week leading up to the knockout stage, the round of 16 for AFCON. And, you know, we had several exciting matches. Obviously, I will quickly go over the match results, and then we'll circle back and go into deeper detail with some of those results. So Nigeria, who was already in the round of 16, won their match. Egypt went over Sudan. The Ivory Coast beat Algeria, the winners of AFCON last year. Equatorial New Guinea beat Sierra Leone. Gambia and Tunisia drew 1-1. And Mali went over Mauritania 2-0. So before we get into what the round of 16 fixtures list, into a deeper detail with the round of 16 fixtures, what are the denizens of the Banter Pub's thoughts about some of those results? Obviously, we know, Nigeria, I feel like were the perennial favorites out of their group to not only win it, but to go on to the round of 16. They are one of the, not for me, there are certainly no shoe-ins in AFCON. But Nigeria is playing really, really well. Ghana was a surprising, not surprising to me, surprising exit from AFCON this year. And also one of the big surprises, and I've talked about this in every Four Africans Only mini episode that I've been on, the North African clubs, once again, it's this paper bag Jack and Jill text stuff. Algeria is out. They won AFCON last year, and they are out, mathematically eliminated. These North African clubs, man, I just gotta say, something to behold. So, gentlemen, what are your thoughts about this current round of 16? Let's talk about it.
Yo, I mean, obviously, I would be remiss if I didn't talk about the Super Eagles first. They played essentially the B team in that matchup, and they played well. They kept a couple guys like Wilfred Ndidi, who I think is central to how Nigeria plays in midfield. He is a solid shield to that back four, provides cover when the fullbacks attack, and he's amazing. I think he played a fantastic match. But the guys that came in, Iwobi, Ejuke, even the backup keeper acquitted himself well for the most part. And that's a really good sign for Nigeria going into the round of 16. Now, granted, Guinea-Bissau were no pushovers, and they deserve a lot of respect for how they played in the tournament. And I think they can go home holding their heads high, unlike Ghana and Algeria, who were on pack watch from the very first match.
Oh, yes.
Of the tournament.
Oh, yes.
So even though Algeria, like, I still thought they would somehow qualify. And they were a bitter disappointment in the matchup with Cote d'Ivoire. I think that was you go into a must-win match and you fumble the bag so badly. And there are no excuses, honestly. These men came into the tournament talking about we're going to break the Italy unbeaten run. we're going to break the Italy unbeaten run record. And you didn't face the food in front of you. This is what happens. Fufu over couscous in this example. Unlike Ghana should be embarrassed.
Yeah. Wow. Talk about going out sad, right? Like, unbelievable. I think this Ghanaian side really has to go back to the drawing board. If I remember rightly, Arma, you said those exact words. I'm thinking of editing the actual FAO episode, but yeah, it's back to the drawing board for Ghana. Mm-hmm. That is an absolutely incredibly poor showing for a side that should be in with a shot of winning this thing, on paper at least. What the hell happened? Like, because I'm genuinely asking, and I'm opening that up to the floor. What the hell happened to Ghana? Like, I don't really understand how they have crashed and burned so heavy. This is kind of shades of when the French crashed out of, which World Cup was it that they crashed out early of?
2010.
Yeah.
Well, both.
Both.
And also, can we talk about the Euros. Also the Euros 2020. So let's
God, yes. Yeah, just now. Like, a side that really intruded, you had to hustle it against, what side was it that they desperately had to beat before they eventually lost to him in the group stage?
I can't even remember. Like, not that good.
that was the kind of performance that Ghana put in against Comoros. That 3-2 loss against Comoros was like, I don't know, you might as well just stick the knife in and don't even bother twisting it, just leave it there. You know what I mean? Unbelievable. I don't know what Ghana does to get back into this thing, but they're not serious peoples. They were not serious this entire tournament, and I just needed to get that out of my system. That was trash.
Yeah. They need to retool. They need to just sack the entire FA, which they did like 6 years ago because they were getting caught up in corruption. They need to just restart. Their golden generation is gone. The IU brothers, who knows what they're doing? They need to get some younger talent back up in there.
Yeah,
Jordan and Andre are not coming back to the side for the next AFCON tournament. Certainly not Andre.
Please, no.
That's a really sad way for Andre to go out too, as well.
It is.
Because God knows that he has given his blood, his sweat, and his literal tears
to this Black Stars outfit, and he's cut. Not even one. He can't even get one. Really will be one of the greatest to play in the tournament that has never won it. And yeah, man, that's just really sad. It's sad, and it is baffling to me that Ghana's gone out in this kind of fashion. Just really, well, I don't know.
I do wanna get through some of the fixtures real quick, because there are some that I'm gonna be heavily paying attention to, and there are some that I think there are some countries that are thinking they're just gonna walk through their opposition in the round of 16 and just go on to the next round. I don't think that's the case. So quickly, Gabon is playing Burkina Faso, Nigeria against Tunisia, Papua New Guinea against Gambia, Cameroon against Comoros, Senegal against Cape Verde, Morocco against Malawi, the Ivory Coast against Egypt, and Mali against Equatorial New Guinea.
You said Papua New Guinea. And then you said Equatorial New Guinea. It's just, that was too funny. I just had to point that one out. Like, Papua New Guinea, that is definitely Southeast Asia. But you know, shout out to them, man, there, if they're competing in AFCON, you know, I wish them all the best, you know, absolutely go hell for leather. You know what I'm saying? You could be the first to ever win it. And you're not even an African nation. Probably
they would get stomped by any team on the African continent.
If they make it this far in the tournament, they're in with a shout to win it. That's all I have to say. Big up Papua New Guinea and them, man, there.
And Equatorial Guinea. No, yes, we're going to correct the record. Yes, we are. Because I'm the host, and it's episode 69, and again, captain's privilege. So how about that?
Which ones are you looking forward to, Neil, of those matchups?
I mean, I think I'm already seeing a lot of attention to Cameroon and Comoros, obviously, because
Cinderella host.
Yeah, well, no, because Cameroon really feels like they're just going to walk into that match and just walk through their opposition and just move on to the next round. And it's just like Ghana thought the same thing. And Ghana is at home. So is that really the attitude you want to come in? Now they could hit a buzzsaw and the result could be different, and Cameroon could just walk right through them. But I don't think I don't think that's going to happen. Another one I'm really looking forward to is
Cameroon gets upset. I don't know what's going to happen.
I mean, anything is possible in AFCON.
Yeah, and Comoros have shown that they deserve to be here. And they deserve to be in the second round. Okay. That one sticks out. I was going to say in the whole, like, Cote d'Ivoire, Egypt, which might have been a semifinal or final matchup, according to some people. That looks like an interesting one. I'm happy to watch that one, because, like, I'm going to be happy whoever loses. And I'm hoping it's Egypt. But, you know. That's what I'm looking forward to. How about the rest of you guys?
I'm looking forward to the most is, well, two matches, Guinea versus Gambia and Mali versus Equatorial Guinea. I'm riding for one of them, Gambia or Mali, to make it to the at least the semifinal, if not the final. Those are my dark horses. Yeah.
So if you're saying Mali would beat a Senegal. If Senegal makes it to...
Yep. I think Mali will beat them.
Wow. Wow.
Put it on wax.
That's a how... My goodness gracious. All right. Well, sound the air horn.
Senegal hasn't been impressive, though. They haven't been impressive. Arguably the most talented team on paper. and they have been pretty lackluster.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not gonna be out here choosing which matches I'm looking forward to the most. Obviously, you don't know. I'll be pulling for Nigeria against Tunisia. Don't fuck it up, lad. Yeah. Thank you very much. Don't know that I want Nigeria to win the thing. You know what I'm saying? Egypt are not my favorites anymore, and going up against Ivory Coast, I think this is where Egypt goes home. Not going to lie. I have not seen that killer instinct and that cutting edge from Egypt that tells me that they're going to run, they're gonna have a deep run on this one. I think Ivory Coast will dump them out. Mali and Equatorial Guinea, I think Mali's going home. I think Equatorial Guinea really have the bit between their teeth. Same thing with Comoros and Cape Verde. I really do feel like those three nations might spring upsets tomorrow. Morocco should have and do have enough about them to take care of Malawi. But, you know, if you're in this part of the competition, hey, you're not safe. You know what I mean? You're not safe. Gambia, I think they will beat Guinea tomorrow. Really do. They've already made history once in this tournament. I think they're fancy doing it again. And then Burkina Faso and Gabon. That, I think, is going to be the sleeper. Where people are, honestly, they're going to be like, oh, maybe that match might be good. I think it will be good, and most people will sleep on it.
I agree. So we've given our thoughts. So we turn it over to you, our listeners. What are your thoughts on AFCON so far? Let us know. But before we do that, Ruffler, did you have any other thoughts about the AFCON fixtures? I know you've been present for the For Africans Only conversations and many episodes that we've had, but this might be your first time giving an opinion about some of these matches.
AFCON is serious business, man. Saw somebody get stiff-armed in the face. It was wonderful. The energy, the celebrations, the goals. It's awesome. It's been a great experience so far to see some of these players kind of represent their country. There are a few matches I'm looking forward to, but overall, I'm just enjoying all of the matches I've had a chance to see. Definitely looking forward to that Ivory Coast Egypt match. I think that's going to be interesting. And I agree with Joseph. I think Egypt is going to get sent home. And I'm rocking with Nigeria. I'm going to be an honorary Nigerian for this one. And I've been checking out a few of their matches and I'm impressed with their team. But overall, the entire tournament has been excellent. Lots of drama, lots of flashiness and energy.
Do your 23andMe, Rosler, and find out. You might be Fulani and might be just rooting for Nigeria for real.
You know, I'm not going to make this a long thing, but we have a lot of dishes that are similar because I started looking up some stuff and, you know, I think it's in my blood, man. We'll see, though. Switcher. I'm not going to fight it like Joseph.
Well, I think Joseph.
That's a good thing.
There was no Joseph, need for that. Look, there was no need
Joseph,
for that.
Joseph, you know, that thing was undeniable. You didn't need the data. And it's like, whether you fight it or not, it just comes out. That's how Nigeria works. Like, if you know anybody who's Nigerian, they're a little extra about being Nigerian. And so it's going to come out of you no matter how you try to suppress it. If you try, if you don't try, Nigeria to carry last. But we're proving it in the tournament. And we're going to prove it in your bloodstream too. FAO.
Amen to that. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we are going to introduce a brand new segment. As we're in the middle of a transfer window, we're going to have a little transfer tease. So see you on the other side of this break.
The goddamn sauce. 9 different flavors, same goddamn feeling. Share our passion for sauce and discover the full goddamn range at thegdsauce.com. Use the discount code TheBantamPubFC to save 15% when you cop the sauce. Boss up.
Welcome back. Welcome back. So it is now time for the transfer tease. because we are in the middle, for those that are keeping score, of a January transfer window. And because we are a forward-thinking podcast with innovative and fresh ideas, we're going to hit you with a brand new segment that nobody else is doing. Because once again, we're innovators in this. And that's the transfer tease. So how this is going to go is I'm going to go through some of the, you know, obviously as we get closer to the close of the window, we're obviously going to do kind of a rewind of everything, all the major things that happened. But as we get closer and closer and closer, we're going to tease out some major stories that happened during the course of the transfer window. So I'm going to hit everyone with a number of major transfers that happened, and we're going to go through them. And then something major that happened, a major decision that happened with FIFA as it relates to loanees. But before we get that, let's get through some of these major transfers. So we had Luca Digne went from Everton to West Ham. There is news out of the new camp that Dembele has been abandoned by the Barca board. He's posted a message on Instagram about his feelings about it, about whether or not his agent is focusing on what he should be doing and what he is doing as a player. He believes that Barcelona has all but abandoned him, and he wants out. It's crystal clear that he wants out. Trippier made a big switch from Atletico Madrid to Newcastle. Obviously, Trippier obviously is familiar with the Premier League because he used to play for Spurs. So, coming back to a Newcastle side and then them getting immediately bounced out of the cup that they were participating in, kind of shocking. But it's typical Newcastle, so we shouldn't be surprised. And they're still sitting at the bottom of the table, or close to it. So they're definitely in the relegation zone. A major transfer that is really kind of under the radar, but I'm curious how everybody else feels about this, because Sevilla is a team that is sneakily, they are certainly shocking a lot of clubs in La Liga, but they're also doing the same in Europe. And that's Jesus Corona going from FC Porto to Sevilla. Now, Sevilla has been stockpiling several players for over several transfer windows and kind of building, I don't necessarily call it a super club, because I feel like there are no super clubs. But Sevilla is quietly building up significant talent. So of those transfers, I'm just curious, gentlemen, what are our thoughts on those major transfers so far? The Dembele news out of Barcelona, Trippier from Atletico Madrid to Newcastle, Luca Digne from going from Everton to West Ham, and obviously Jesus Corona going from FC Porto to Sevilla. Have at it, y'all. Like, what are your thoughts?
Trippier, let's take Newcastle. So they did that, but they also grabbed the striker from Burnley, right?
Chris Wood? For a reason, because he wasn't scoring for Burnley, so why did they think he would score? Go ahead, I'm sorry. I cut you off.
It's part of it is just like, statement of intent, and everybody's wondering, are they going to sign Messi? Are they going to sign blah, blah, blah? And then, you come up with all this money and then you sign Chris Wood, like, underwhelming. You come up with all this money and you sign Kieran Trippier. And his best days are behind him. I don't care what anybody says. He might be familiar with the Prem, but his best days are behind him. So, yeah, underwhelming from the, new money kids. You're still in the relegation zone. Y'all might, in fact, let them drop. They're going to drop with their new money. I'm like, I'm surprised that they're not getting more players that'll give them instant impact. I guess it's just hard out here for the nouveau riche. to figure out how to spend their money. Yeah, and then the other transfer I'm going to identify with, again, for selfish reasons, is Arsenal getting rid of both Pablo Mari and Sead Kolasinac. I wish them all the best in their future endeavors. Like, all the Arsenal outcasts seem to go to Marseille, where Kolasinac went. And so, you know, that means we have a decent relationship with them, and hopefully
Marseille might do a mad thing and just fuck around and win.
I don't care what they do as long as they give us our quality players back that are on loan. And maybe we build a relationship and we can sign some of their quality at some point. Yeah, that's really, those are the things that are on my mind the most. You know what I mean? Like, I feel for, and I guess I feel a little bit for Dembele. The coach came in and said wonderful things. I felt like making the right noises to try to get something out of him. And if Barca doesn't want, if Barca don't want him anymore, please, man, free the lad. Let him go. And you better do it before he goes somewhere for free.
That's true.
Yeah.
John?
I mean, that's what they've been trying to, they're trying to do. They're trying to let him go for something. That's why they're doing them like this. I really don't like how they're treating. I mean, this is what they do to black players when they need to push them out. You see everything that's come out about Umtiti as well, about getting a pay cut. It's like, motherfucker, honor your contract. I didn't sign pay cut. I signed you for you to pay me this type of money right here. And y'all getting billions of dollars from banks? Like, ain't nobody want to hear that. So, I feel bad for Dembele. Free the man if he wants to stay, but if y'all need to let him go, y'all need to let him go. I was going to say, I really, really like Corona going to Sevilla. Sevilla, they're going for a big push. They're only 4 points off first place in a league that, you know, Real's been on top, but it can... you know, anything could happen. A couple of fixtures, a couple of COVID cases, it can go Sevilla's way. So I really like what they're doing, really pushing for the league this year when they need it the most. And they're stocking up on, like you said, Neil, they're stocking up. And I'm for this last, these last, you know, half of the season, I really am liking it. I'm going to be excited to see this race to the finish, to the final for in La Liga.
Roffler, Joseph, do you have anything to add before we talk about this major announcement from FIFA?
No.
just one thing. Kieran Trippier, enjoy the championship next season, bruv. I'm sure you'll be excellent in that league.
Oh, boy. Oh, he's going to be down there with Chris Wood. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Sucks for Newcastle. Maybe... St. Maxim.
Joe Linton is going to win the Golden Boot next season. What?
Maybe it's time for St. Maxim to leave Newcastle, despite the fact that he's going to be paid handsomely probably next season, despite the fact they'll be in the championship. So the other major piece of news that happened, it broke in the middle of the day today. As of the recording, FIFA has announced new loan rules to prevent player stockpiling. So this goes into effect next season, and basically I'll read a piece of it and then I'll get everyone's thoughts and then we'll get to extra time in a moment. But FIFA have announced the new regulations that include a limit on the number of players a club can have out on loan at any given time, although homegrown players and those under 21 will remain exempt. And then their loan system that includes young players, promoting competitive balance and preventing clubs from hoarding players. Now, what's interesting about this is obviously one of the major derbies in the world was a North London derby that actually got postponed because several Arsenal players were either out because of COVID or they were out on loan and couldn't return back to Arsenal to play in the North London derby. And obviously Spurs got upset because obviously they were like, most of our team is healthy, so we should play, obviously. But Arsenal won that decision when they had a conversation with the English FA, and But then FIFA rolled out. So it's just interesting that a day later, or literally the same week, not a day later, but the same week, FIFA rolls out these new loan relegations. So they go into effect in the they go into effect July 1st, 2022, limiting a club to a maximum of 8 professional players loaned in and 8 loaned out during a season. So before we get to extra time, I need to know how everyone feels about these new FIFA rules, because obviously they don't just affect the major leagues, they also affect the minor leagues as well. And obviously several clubs have players in the lower league getting reps. So let's start with Joseph. With these new loan rules that go into effect in July, in the middle of the summer transfer window, when a lot of these loan conversations are happening, what are your thoughts?
I think that we really need to see if this is actually going to be a measure that's going to get these clubs to stop frigging well stockpiling players. That's the objective. But the problem there is that, you know, will this get player prices to come down a bit? Because ultimately, that's what we need to see, right? It's the market's hyperinflated. You know, we're seeing, you know, 9 figures for one player. You know what I'm saying? Most sides don't bankroll that. You know, they're not even worth that. You know, never mind the clubs that are spending that, you know, ungodly amounts of money every summer and or January. I think it's going to be a suck it and see thing. I think it's going to be one of those things where you just basically have to wait to see how it all plays out. Will clubs devise strategies that, you know, to continue stockpiling players, but then they have to kind of, you know, game the system a bit more in different ways? I don't know if it's going to curtail it in the way that I think it is. So putting limits on players that are loaned out could also backfire, I think. But it's not really something that is player friendly, this whole thing. I think it's more for benefit of the trying to, you know, spread the players around. That's what they're trying to do, try and make everything a bit more competitive. Players, you know, have more opportunities to start for their clubs and compete for places at different clubs and things of that nature. But I don't know if changing the loan rules is going to fix all that. You know what I mean? What they're really kind of doing is anything but what they really should be doing. And that's perhaps maybe instituting a salary cap and a cap on how much clubs can spend per window. That's something that I think association football needs more than any other sport in the world. You know what I mean? It might be time for that. Financial fair play is an absolute piece of crap. Jonathan, I don't want to hear you say anything. Be quiet. You know what I'm saying? But innocent. At the end of the day,
we are innocent.
No, I told you to be quiet, and this is what you do. So anyway, look, the fact of the matter is this. Financial fair play, piece of shit. It's not going to work, okay? The Super League gave you that scare. Huh? So yeah, it's time to go ahead and get a handle on finances around here. Because clubs will continue to go into liquidation, and, you know, players will get stockpiled by clubs who can afford to do that. And then essentially, football becomes a lifestyle brand, as opposed to a competitive sport. You know, ultimately, all the stockpiling, people playing football like it's a game of syndicate. You know what I mean? Like, I don't like the syndication model that, you know, it promises to turn out to be if we don't get some fucking regulation in. So, yeah, this is just a stopgap to ultimately having to seriously consider having to institute like hard spending limits so that other clubs can be competitive with the ones that can basically buy competitions every season. We need it. But I don't know if it's going to be enough. That's kind of where I'm at with it.
Yeah, I think that's pretty well said. I did want to highlight that loophole about youth players and players under 21. Like, I think what happens with the rich clubs is it'll become a cash grab. Not you know, so you see the Chelsea model to a certain degree, the model that United started, just buying everybody. Regardless of age, I think it'll be a focus on youth. And then, you know, what happens in your capitalist system or in a market economy is that, you know, the demand, as the demand goes up, the price goes up. So yep. Now you'll see insane dollars. You see youth players going for insane dollars and, you know, academy poaching in order to get that homegrown advantage. I think there will be this kind of half-assed attempt at regulation will just gives the, it shifts where the money will go a little bit, but the behaviors will not change. The rich clubs who can afford it will still stockpile. We've said many times on the, you know, we've critiqued Chelsea specifically for this over the years, because that's well known, you know, how they behave. And then, you know, that's the reason why we said Jurgen Klopp didn't, that he hates Nigeria, is because Taiwo Awoniyi, killing it for Union Berlin and Nigeria and AFCON, he was a signed Liverpool player, and I don't think he ever wore the shirt. Like, he was out on loan over and over and over and over again. And he was one of like four Nigerian youth players at Liverpool. Anyway, all that to say, I think what the loopholes that are in there, where you have unlimited, you can still do unlimited transfer, so you can get them off your books for a while. You send them out to places, whether they play or don't play. But I think they'll just grab a bunch of youth players with all the money they have, and they can afford to gamble and see who comes good and who doesn't. I feel like that's going to be a net negative for their development and for the game in general.
John, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think my opinion doesn't differ too far from Joseph and Amma. I think Amma said it best, that you're going to get into a situation where, yeah, it'll be a cash grab, essentially, for all what's considered homegrown, what's considered youth players. I was thinking about Chelsea. I was so excited at first because I was like, oh, yeah, that Chelsea, if you think that Chelsea pack is bad now, they're going to be shit out of luck when this goes into effect. Because, you know, as it stands, like with all the players that they have loaned out, I think it's like a record number. And there have been so many articles that have come out around that. It takes away the competitiveness of the game. And it, like, I'm going to say it hurts the player. The player that wants to get good time, playing for a top club, you know, making good money, getting that attention and endeavors. Like, Chelsea, in this example, it's not just Chelsea that does it. Manchester City has done it too in the past. Many clubs have done this in the past. It's just like you're robbing somebody's ability to be great in this game by loading them out to club after club after club and not having them compete in the league that, you know, makes the most money. So I think the long-term impact is with that cash grab. Yeah, it's going to be a huge bubble and it's going to blow up. It's going to cause like a huge economic ripple effect. It might signal the end of the Premier League's dominance. I'm not going to lie. I think that's what's going to happen because we're already at a point where the major players, the ultra-rich players are investing into the game, owning clubs. And from that point, the bubble's been formed. The bubble is getting bigger and bigger. So adding this to the equation where they have to consolidate more and more, the bubble is just going to blow up at some point. So, which might be, it's going to be damaging for players, but, you know, it might shake up governance of global football. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, that's my thoughts on it.
You know,
just quickly to what Jonathan was saying earlier, you know, it's interesting that you think that it's this that I think is going to spell the end of the Premier League's dominance. I think that happened already. Brexit. I think Brexit, the way that these clubs are going through extra additional red tape just to bring players in, like look what Leeds is going through, Newcastle, you know, they're having to buy domestic. They're looking at Lingard, evidently.
Apparently.
You know what I'm saying? It's like, look what it's doing already to the championships sides. Their scouting policies are absolutely wrecked. Like they've had to start from scratch essentially. So it will have a ripple effect, as I think that you say, but I think it's going to be felt on a deeper current. Combined with Brexit, these rules mean that they're going to have to stockpile youth in order to go ahead and circumvent the rules, which I really don't understand why they even put that exempting under 23s from there. It doesn't make any sense at all. Okay, you're protecting their freedom of movement, but the clubs are still going to buy up all the top prospects. And as Arma said, you know, it'll be a suck it and see thing. We'll see what works, we'll see what doesn't, we'll see what sticks, we'll see what doesn't. If we end up spending, like, you know, blowing a whole 100 million quid on just, you know, under 23s, you know, and we only keep two of them and we bought six of them, you know, whatever. We'll do it again next season. It's nothing to these clubs. So the Premier League has to kind of look at it from that aspect also. How many of these clubs are actually going to be able to get fair pickings of, you know, what under 23s are available out there? I don't even think it's going to be a bubble. I think it's going to be a crash and burn. Like, it will be like cryptocurrency, where it will be volatile, be worth $40,000 one moment, and then it'll be worth $1,000 the next. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's weird. But yeah, no, I think you mentioned touched on a really interesting thing about how what's spelling the Premier League dominance. I think it's more of a perfect storm in an objective standpoint. But I think the thing has already happened. Brexit is going to make it hard to get players in anyway. The youth system in the UK is not good enough to produce that kind of talent. I'll say that from now. Now there's this rule. Yeah. I think it's just going to make clubs' life in all of England and Wales. Well, English and Welsh clubs compete in the English football pyramid system. Some of them do, but like, it's already being felt on a lower league level. It is just a matter of time before the Premier League is going to be strapped for certain players, and you won't have very many English or Welsh or, you know, homegrown products to draw from, you know. And who's to say that they will stay in the UK to play anyway? Because again, Brexit, they might get a better deal playing in Spain, France, Germany, Italy, and then places there. Hell, a lot of them, quiet as it's kept, have started looking at MLS clubs. I'm talking the youth players too. Romeo Beckham plays for Fort Lauderdale. Okay? He's Gucci. Just got his Puma deal and everything. I really don't feel like the Premier League can continue to run on TV revenue and things of that nature. But if you're talking about whether or not the dominance has ended, that happened once Brexit was effective. And it's still not completely, totally effective yet. But it's getting there. And they're already feeling the crunch. You know what I'm saying? So the Premier League, boy. Now that you mention it, maybe this is FIFA's way of divesting and weaning themselves off of relying on the Premier League to turn out so much talent worldwide. Because they have to play somewhere else. You think Prithvi Patel is giving any of them African players any visas to play football in the United Kingdom? Get the fuck out of here. You did. You see how they were deported all the people? Windrush generation, bruv? Listen. Football is definitely going to look different in the next 5 years, tops, in the UK. And the Premier League, it will suffer. But I don't think it's down to this one rule. I think this one rule is just part of the perfect storm of many things that is already in circulation. So, interesting point, though. I'm glad you mentioned it. I really am, because I've been wanting to talk about this for quite a while, actually. When will the Premier League be done out here?
Russell, do you have any other final thoughts before we get into extra time?
Just one. I agree with a lot of what's been said. Hopefully, it can create a better environment for the players, but I'm kind of curious what spurred FIFA to implement the changes. It just seems kind of random, but I'm sure we'll find out more about that later. But I agree again with a lot of what's been said. Hopefully it's a change for the better and it can help make things a bit more fair when there are clubs that are just spending a ton of money, spending their way to win. Isn't the greatest. I'm not going to mention any. Well, I'll mention a team. Like, you have the Cities and the Uniteds and the Liverpools. some spend more than others, but and Chelsea is spending a ton of money compared to other clubs who don't have the same backing to be competitive. Hopefully it can even that out a bit more.
Time will tell, for sure, for sure. We're going to take one more break before we get into extra time. You know what extra time is? 60 seconds. 60 seconds on the clock. We've been on this episode for almost 60 seconds. Something that touched you in regards to the beautiful game or just in life.
Extra time, we got
all right. So, extra time. Already told you what it is, but just as a reminder, 60 seconds. Everyone gets a chance to talk about something that touched them this week, whether it be in the beautiful game or just anything else that happened to them this week that they want to mention, or just anything else in the world that they want to bring light. So I'm going to start with John. John, 60 seconds on the clock. Extra time. What you got?
Yeah, I just want to big up the NWSL Players Association. It came out today that they've been working hard negotiating for a CBA for over a year, and don't have to remind y'all what happened in the NWSL this past year, and now they're ready to put some direct action in, and if they don't have a CBA in place by February 1st, they're not reporting. So big up to them, big up to worker power, worker rights, bringing the NWSL back in this place so they can sign a good deal. So shout out to them.
Joseph, you're up next. 60 seconds. It's your time.
Oh, man. I just want to shout out the Sons of Ben. Sons of Ben are a supporters group here in Philadelphia, and they support the Philadelphia Union. And why am I talking about the Philadelphia Union? You know, oh yeah, Joseph, weren't you always going up for Orlando City SC for all these years? Yes, you are absolutely right. That changed this week when I decided that I could no longer resist the fact that I work here, I live here, I love it here, and I play football here. It was infectious. From the moment that I went to Super Park from the first time, the tailgate that I had with Sons of Ben was great. And it just grew on me. Being part of the football scene here in Philadelphia has grown on me. It only makes sense for me to be a Philadelphia Union supporter now. And that is what I officially am. So thank you, Orlando City, for all the memories. I appreciate it. I didn't win anything, but there were plenty of memories. And I have enjoyed being a supporter of yours for the many years I have. But you know what? My heart is here in Philadelphia. Up the Union. See you out there in terraces, kids.
Roffler, extra time, what you got?
Oh, we taking applications for Joseph's spot since he wanted to sell out to Philly. So anybody run and rock with the Orlando City crew, holla at me.
Was that your extra time?
Yes. Yep, that's it.
Wow.
That's it.
Wow. I'm laughing my ass off, but I'm thinking to myself, hey, yo. This man is serious. He said that he's auctioning off my spot. It's fine. I kept it warm. You know what I'm saying? So it's a prestigious spot as well. We
appreciate it.
You know,
you actually got me into it. So I'll make sure it's somebody good. But we taking applications, bro.
Okay. Well, yeah. I mean, that's good. I mean, that also is a testament to me being a bridge builder. So I appreciate
it. You're burning it, though. You can't come back.
Wow. He said, well, all right. Okay.
God damn. Well, shit. All right. Well, fuck you too, then.
Extra time, what you got?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, my brain has been on AFCON over the last week, and I feel like it's worthwhile to say, you know, like, when the camera's gone, when the spectacle's over, still follow, support these players and all the places that they work. It matters. It matters so much for them to play for their country. And I'm happy for all the folks, you know, so for the Burkina Fasos and the Cape Verdes and the Comoroses. And I'll try my best to keep tabs on some of the players that have impressed me over the tournament. And I suggest that everyone do the same. That's my extra time.
And shout out to your player partner, Sanache, giving us a little extra in your extra. Always appreciate you.
She's uncontrollable.
She's doing what she's supposed to be doing, hamming it up. For my extra time, I'm going to mention two things in 60 seconds. First, if you haven't seen the Diego Maradona documentary on HBO Max, watch it when you are not listening to our podcast. Get a chance to watch it. They cover his untimely passing up until the moment, and then they go back in time and talk about his rise. So it's a little different way of presenting him as a man, as a player, as a character, as literally one of the greatest men to ever grace a soccer pitch. Definitely watch that. Also, this is just a point I'm going to make before we wrap. Just because you are a black man and you have a microphone in front of your mouth doesn't mean you should press record and have a podcast. And that's all I'm going to say on that. So, thank you for listening to another wonderful episode of the Banter Pub FC podcast, sauciest team in the game, the spiciest takes on the pitch. Be sure to follow us on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter at the Banter Pub FC. Subscribe to us on YouTube and on Twitch. Twitch things are coming. You know they're coming. YouTube content is coming. You know it's coming. We've talked about it since the beginning of season 3 that we're doing a career mode. We are bringing back some OG faces for that career mode, so get excited for that. If you like what you hear every week, we ask that you rate, like, and subscribe, and give us a shout out every once in a while on Twitter. We will do our due diligence and make it known that you are a listener. For Joseph, for Ama, for John, for Rossler, and also for Adam, this is El Capitan Neil signing off. We will see you next week in the pub.